You are listening to 93.3 FM WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio. Coming up next, a show the NSA always loves to listen into, and stop tapping my phones. This is The Mike Cannon Show.
Warning. The views expressed on The Mike Cannon Show, or the segments brought to you on this indie media radio show, do not necessarily reflect the views of WNRB nor WNRB's hosts.
Guess who's back again.
Mike Cannon.
This is my boomstick!
This could be dangerous. You should go back.
I know you're out there. I can feel it now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change.
Heads up.
Look, some worried America's losing its stature as a world leader, but I ain't worried because we are number one. In locking up our own citizens, 1 in 4 of all the prisoners in the entire world is in America. 2.3 million, 1 in 100 American adults, highest dang rate in the world. In your face, Russia. Sit down, Cuba, Turkmenistan, you ain't got no game. We are the champions, my friends, and we will lock you.
Now, the only radio commentator not addicted to illegal pain medication, nor Viagra, Mike Cannon.
Unlike AM radio chicken hawks like Rush, I am not addicted to OxyContin, nor do I take sex tours of Haiti with someone else's Viagra. Speaking of chicken hawks, this quick commentary. About 2 weeks ago, a high school Hispanic student was beaten to death in Pennsylvania while his fellow white students were yelling racial epithets at him. It is not a coincidence that the all-hate AM talk show world is pushing hate-mongering of illegals as being the cause of everything, including the housing crisis, because government has given, quote, illegal special right to buy houses they can't afford, unquote. From Michael Savage of the Savage Nation to our own local Rush wannabe, Pat Schneider, the tactic of right-wing all-hate AM radio is to vilify the already marginalized in this country. Schneider's personal favorite target is welfare mothers as well. You see, it's all these white guys got. Like the Nazis knew, they knew that if they distract us from the massive troubles facing our country and the corporate paymasters who promoted this war, this housing crisis, this poor economy is the only bullet left in their six-shooter. Pick on those marginalized groups, vilify them, because they can't really fight back. Well, next time a young Hispanic gets beaten to death at the hands of their listeners, they are as responsible for the deaths as the Nazi propaganda minister Goebbels was for vilifying the Jews. The propaganda minister Goebbels did not personally kill the Jews, didn't personally have them beaten, shot, and gassed, but the Nuremberg trial still brought him to justice. Sure, the propagandists of our time did not kill this young man in Pennsylvania either, just helped motivate their listeners to stomp a kid to death.
I'm gonna tell all you fascists, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to fight to lose. You fascists are bound to lose. Race hatred cannot stop us, this one.
For over 2 years now, the Mike Cannon Show has been bringing you news and information not regurgitated by the corporate propagandists. This fully independent radio show brings you news and information that the six mega corporations that control 90% of all television, newsprint, and radio do not want you to know. If you like your news spoon-fed to you, then this is not the place for you.
You can't handle the truth!
You know, I think you can handle the truth, and you get it right here each and every week on the Mike Cannon Show. The Mike Cannon Show is produced for not-for-profit, community, and or micropower radio use worldwide at the Glee Glee Studios. Most of what you'll be hearing here on my show, and my show as well, is posted at the RadioForAll.net website. RadioForAll.net acts as kind of clearinghouse for us not-for-profit producers. The RadioForAll.net website has just been updated, and their server and service is much more consistent. Make sure your browser, however, is also updated to avoid problems. Let's get right into this week's show. We'll be starting out the show like we do each and every week with a Lefty News and Review segment called Eat the State. Later this hour will be a piece I produced for the Alternative Radio World Ether called This Week in Radical History. Between those two pieces will be a shorter segments and a little bit of goofiness here and there. As always, thanks for tuning in to this Indie Media Radio program, normally heard every Monday from 2 to 6. Thanks for listening.
Bushed! Lame duck gate. President Bush has hired a new deputy chief of staff, a presidential advisor on par with a national security advisor. Who's he found to fill the shoes of 52-year-old Joe Hagan, a logistics expert with 3 decades experience in D.C., who also served in the first Bush administration and is now leaving to become a CEO? It's Blake Gottesman, Jenna's high school boyfriend, who's now 28 years old. His most important previous job was carrying Mr. Bush's coat. Literally, he was the kid who physically carried the president's coat. He also occasionally carried Barney, the famously ill-tempered Bush family dog. Now that kid is deputy chief of staff. Sleep easy, America.
It is 8:31, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, moving on to National and the EPA.
Speaking of environmental protection, a couple of items this week on greenhouse gases and the EPA's role therein. This is a report came out this week from the EPA's Inspector General, and you'll be shocked, I am sure, to find out that according to the Inspector General of the EPA, very few of the industry are volunteering to adopt the Bush administration's approach of voluntary cutbacks in emissions of greenhouse gases. There are 11 different programs, 10 of which dated to the Clinton administration, which are supposedly supposed to inspire industry to voluntarily cut back on greenhouse gases. They're going almost completely unused and, of course, probably unpromoted as well by the Bush EPA. And also, in terms of the Bush EPA, this is in the department of being unclear on the concept. There was Senate testimony this week in a committee that the EPA tried to evade greenhouse gas regulations for power plants by trying to define CO2 from cars as somehow being chemically different from the CO2 that is emitted from power plants. These are folks that just don't have a very clear understanding of, middle school chemistry.
Yeah, I took chemistry in high school. I don't know about these people.
Well, I think this even, I was going to say high school, but this even predates high school.
Yeah, really. I think it, you even get that concept when you're younger.
Right.
Yes.
Moving on to this week's economic news.
Yeah, the House passed a bill this week to deal with the housing crisis. That bill is up before the Senate and is likely to pass today. The question is, will this bill actually help anyone? And the jury's still out on that. My take on it is that no, it's not going to help a whole heck of a lot. The key provision, which a $300 billion loan, actually $300 billion from the U.S. Treasury to nationalize a portion of these failing mortgages, is really just a tiny drop in the bucket. It's called the HOPE program, and it's supposed to help up to 400,000 homeowners refinance from private mortgages with adjustable rates into government mortgage. But there's some big, crucial limits to who can take advantage of the program that's going to prevent most people who are in trouble from being able to utilize it. The biggest problem is that it's voluntary on the part of their private lenders, whether or not people can actually take advantage of the program. And if a lender can get more money by foreclosing on your house and selling it on the market, especially in a market like here in Seattle where prices are still pretty good, then lenders are going to do that. They're not going to let you take advantage of the program.
One of those voluntary programs again.
Yeah, and then even if you're in a housing market that's doing poorly, it's not going to probably be for you either, because lenders are going to have to take a big write-down on the value of the original mortgage. HOPE will only write mortgages for about 90% of the current market value of your home. So if your home has dropped in value, that means your private lender is going to have to take a big write down. And because the program's voluntary, a lot of lenders aren't going to do that. They're going to say, well, we'll foreclose and keep the house and let it sit until prices go up. You know, that's another option for them. So it's a question of, will anyone want to take advantage of it? In addition, people who have already gotten a foreclosure notice on their home won't qualify. You have to be at risk of, but not yet in the foreclosure process in order to do it. So
So the millions of people who've already been foreclosed, there's nothing for them.
Yeah, and it's only supposed to help about 400,000 people. Well, if we look at the number of people who got foreclosure notice in the second quarter of this year, it was above 700,000. So it's really just a tiny drop in the bucket. And there's no real incentive to make private lenders participate. So I don't think it's going to help much at all. The other part of the plan that was controversial was an unlimited line of credit to prop up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Well, that might be necessary to avoid the total collapse of the credit markets, but that means taxpayers are going to be on the hook for the low estimate is $25 billion. That's the Congressional Budget Office estimate. But I've seen estimates from private economists as high as $1 trillion in bailout money for Fannie and Freddie.
All right, just a few minutes left. Barack Obama's trip overseas.
Yeah, the Barack Obama adulation world tour is just about to wrap up. A couple of significant things out of it. One is that foreign leaders seem to be falling over themselves to all but coming out and endorsing Barack Obama for president, which tells you a lot about the bankruptcy of the current regime and how John McCain is viewed as being an extension of the current regime. In particular, Maliki, the prime minister of Iraq, came out and essentially endorsed Barack's timetable for withdrawal of troops from Iraq. We also had Obama in Afghanistan signaling a major commitment of troops to that conflict, and that's something that people need to start paying attention to, that both Obama and McCain have signaled that they want to be in Afghanistan and at war there for the long haul without any kind of real national debate as to whether A, that war is winnable, and B, whether we want to be there, and if so, to what purpose. We need to start paying more attention to Afghanistan.
All right. Other info on Iraq?
Yeah, the Kurdish president Jalal Talabani vetoed the election law this week that would have called for fall provincial elections. It looks like those elections now are not going to happen. And then the State Department Inspector General is investigating whether the State Department was illicitly encouraging backdoor deals between the government of Iraq and oil companies. According to the Bush administration, those deals aren't supposed to happen until after an oil law is passed. But apparently, behind the scenes, they were negotiating for oil companies to be making money off Iraq anyway. Gee, imagine that.
Yeah.
And Israel-Palestine?
Yeah, this also was an outgrowth of the Obama trip that once again we had the U.S. media portraying meeting with Palestinian and Israeli leaders, but it wasn't met with the actual elected government of Palestine, that being Hamas. People in this country and the media seem to be pretending that Hamas doesn't exist, and guess what? They do, and they actually are the elected representatives of the Palestinian people. We need to start dealing with them on that basis.
All right. And briefly, Pakistan.
Yeah, Amnesty International report came out this week saying that Pakistan has disappeared hundreds of, quote, terrorism suspects over the past several years, as young as 9 years old. And a lot of that happened under Musharraf, but it continued to happen under the current government, even in recent weeks and months. And the really telling part of this was that a lot of those folks, the Amnesty accused the Pakistani government of torture of these suspects as well, but they were also accused them of extraordinary rendition. What horrible third country were they exporting them to that practices torture that's even worse than Pakistan's? The United States. We're now the country that other totalitarian regimes export their prisoners to in order to be tortured.
Susskind obtained this Pentagon document dated March 5, 2001, entitled Foreign Suitors for Iraqi Oil Field Contracts. It includes a map of potential areas for exploration.
It talks about contractors around the world from, 30, 40 countries, and which ones have what intentions or...
On oil
in Iraq.
During the campaign, candidate Bush had criticized the Clinton-Gore administration for being too interventionist.
If we don't stop extending our troops all around the world... and nation-building missions, then we're going to have a serious problem coming down the road, and I'm going to prevent that.
Mr. President, about the report that we're using our spy satellites to spy on the Iraqi army, who are supposedly our allies.
Well, think of it this way. You ever have a girlfriend you think's cheating on you, so you hire a secret detective to follow her and find out? Except the girlfriend is an army, and the detective is a multi-billion-dollar spy satellite, and maybe you'll marry her, set up a house or a billion-dollar military base, and live there forever and ever. Love's a funny thing, huh?
You know you only had one shot to make it right. To do the right thing. So listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
Women's E-News, weekly summary of news about women, women's issues, and from women's perspectives. From the weekly Cheers and Jeers column of July 26, 2008. I'm Sandy Billings. Leading with good news, cheers for a bill designed to give Native women protection. The Tribal Law and Order Act of 2008, designed to lower sexual violence against American Indian women and Alaska Native women, was introduced by the Senate of Indian Affairs Committee. The bill would allow tribal police to enforce violations of federal laws on Indian lands. The act will also offer tribal police greater access to criminal history information. Amnesty International found the rate of rape and other sexual violence against Native women to be 2.5 times higher than that for other U.S. women. On July 17th, the committee also held a hearing on the implementation of the Adam Walsh Act for tracking sex offenders. The U.S. Congress had passed this bill in 2006 without tribal consultation. The law requires tribal governments to include all convictions for qualifying sex offenses in their registries and to register offenders in the places where they live and work. Those that don't comply will automatically cede jurisdiction to the state. The majority of tribes that are now working to create their own tracking systems face a 2009 deadline. The National Congress of American Indians has said that tribes that opt to implement the Adam Walsh Act should have the same rights and access to criminal databases as U.S. states. More news to cheer this week. Italy's highest criminal court, Court of Cassation, overturned a ruling that women wearing tight jeans cannot be raped. In a controversial 1999 court decision, a 45-year-old man in Potenza, who was convicted of raping an 18-year-old, was let off when the judge ruled that it would have been impossible to have taken her jeans off without her collaboration. This month, a 37-year-old man, who was convicted of sexually assaulting a 16-year-old, based his appeal on that case. But the court ruled, quote, that jeans cannot be compared to any type of chastity belt, unquote. Jordan's Ministry of Health will begin dispensing free condoms and birth control pills through public hospital and health centers, military hospitals, and family planning organizations. Auckland, New Zealand is promoting national cervical screening among Asian women. Less than half of Asian women in New Zealand have the test every 3 years, compared to over 70% of other women nationwide. Two organizations working on sexual orientation and gender identity have been granted consultative status by the UN Economic and Social Council. The consultative status will allow them to deliver oral and written reports at UN meetings and to organize events on UN premises. With this designation, the COC Netherlands and the State Federation of Lesbians, Gays, Transsexuals, and Bisexuals of Spain will have the same access as other non-governmental organizations in the UN system. The U.S. House of Representatives reauthorized a program that urges states to process nearly 400,000 untested rape kits nationwide. The Debbie Smith DNA Backlog Grant Program started in 2004. It is named for Debbie Smith, a rape victim who gave congressional testimony about untested rape kits in 2001. The bill awaits Senate authorization. And for the downside of the news this week, we start with jeers for news that women eat least and last as prices rise. High food and fuel prices have pushed more than 130 million people across Africa, Asia, and Latin America into deeper poverty. A Washington Post feature story on July 20th finds female caretakers in Burkina Faso bearing the brunt in that country. Women interviewed there are eating last and eating least in their families. A study by the aid group Catholic Relief Services indicates that the majority of people in Burkina Faso are now spending about three-quarters of their income on food, leaving little for medical care, school fees, and clothes. Higher costs have also increased the pressure on some women to turn to prostitution to survive. The Humanitarian News and Analysis looks at a similar situation in Afghanistan. They found that a combination of high food prices and drought in Afghanistan is driving women and girls into sex. The majority are widows with little education who lack training for alternative employment. More news to jeer this week. Same-sex marriages will not appear on the 2010 U.S. Census, since the Federal Defense of Marriage Act bars the agency from counting those unions. Same-sex marriages are legal in Massachusetts and California. Photos of two drowned Roma girls covered in towels and surrounded by relaxing Italian sunbathers has drawn international attention to the country's negative attitude towards Roma. The incident occurred 3 weeks after UN experts denounced Italian politicians for seeking to fingerprint all Romani citizens, including children, as part of a crackdown on street crime. Roma are also widely known as gypsies, a term some in the group consider a slur. At least 8 women and 1 man have been sentenced to death by stoning in Iran after being convicted of adultery and sex offenses. Their lawyers say the execution could occur at any time, even though Iran's judiciary chief Ayatollah Mahmoud Hashemi Sarodi imposed a moratorium on stoning in 2002. Members of Parliament in Northern Ireland have tabled an amendment to the Human Fertilization and Embryology Bill, which will lift the country's ban on abortion. Current abortion in Ireland is allowed only if the mother's life is in danger. Each year, around 1,000 women pay for private procedures in Britain. 8 Hispanic women filed a Superior Court discrimination lawsuit against the San Luis Obispo County's probation department in California. According to the lawsuit, the women were denied training and promotion opportunities that are available to white co-workers. Taboos about sex in Pakistan, where Islamic law prohibits extramarital sex, are hindering safe sex educational efforts in a country where at least 85,000 citizens have contracted HIV/AIDS. This, according to researchers at 2 Pakistani universities. These news briefs were compiled by Besa Lucci. Rita Henley Jensen is the editor-in-chief. This production of Women's E-News is brought to you by VP Foundation and Yin Radio. Background music is by Joan Hickey. This column and more news about women can be found at the Women's E-News website, www.womensenews.org. For Yin Radio, I'm Sandy Billings.
Heads up. My friends, with Social Security, we're paying present-day retirees with the taxes paid by young workers today. And that's a disgrace. An absolute disgrace.
Wait, Senator, that's how Social Security works. That's how it's always worked. You know that, right? You're almost 72. How can you not know how Social Security works?
Oh, I know how it works. I'm just against it. Because old people have been getting a free ride long enough, right? Right?
We are being hailed by the Borg.
Job loss, failing schools, prohibitively expensive health care, pensions at risk, entitlement programs approaching bankruptcy, rising gas and food prices, to name a few. But your government often acts as if it is completely unaware of the changes and hardships in your lives. And when government does take notice, often it only makes matters worse.
Mr. Worf, fire.
Now, the Radio Factor with Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly is a tough and very fair interrogator.
He's a marvelous communicator.
Playing with fire, Bill O'Reilly.
Caution! You're about to enter the spin zone.
Enter the spin zone. 877-9-SPIN. 1-877-9-SPIN. And now, here's Bill O'Reilly.
Okay.
Bill O'Reilly.
And that's what we're going to talk about. Spin News. In the spin zone, what's going on?
You're in the spin zone with Bill O'Reilly.
Spin? Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? Spin? Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? A cynical political player.
You can use your computer to destroy people.
I'm smarter than you.
I fly here. So I'm on a radio, but I'm doing TV work too. I'm an independent. In the spin zone, what's going on? Collapse of the family, collapse of fathers. I'm an independent. I'm an independent. You've got to lash out against this hip-hop stuff. You look at what you have now. in the hip-hop community. I mean, it is just spin.
I'm an independent.
You're in the Spin Zone with Bill O'Reilly.
I'm an independent.
We did big business over the weekend. You want some sharp-looking stuff for the summer? Pop culture. That's just me. 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 Me.
Turning with enthusiasm now to our nightly roundup of celebrity and tabloid news. Thanks to the folks at BarelyPolitical.com, we have our first ever look at the producer on the other end of Bill O'Reilly's outburst on Inside Edition. Check this out.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. Okay, I don't know what.
Just read it, Bill.
Whatever it is, it's not right on a teleprompter. I don't know what that is. I've never seen that.
I know you haven't seen it because you have the IQ of a turnip, you hapless gorilla. Just read it.
Yeah, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
The words are right here. What's the matter with you? Are you blind as well as stupid? How can someone have a head that large without anything in it? Is it just fluid up there? And what are you doing with that hair? Did you just blow dry your scalp until it resembles a coconut? Is that what you were going for?
There's no words there. To play us out. What does that mean? To play us out.
Have you ever read Flowers for Algernon? You remind me of the guy in that story before he got smarter. You remind me of Lenny from Mice and Men because I think I should take you outside and shoot you before someone else has to kill you for being so stupid.
I don't know what that means.
It means you're so dumb, you're practically inhuman. You're like a baboon, but less clever.
What does that mean?
I hate you so much.
All right, go.
Don't yell at me. I'll bounce this binder off that half-deflated basketball you call a face.
That's tomorrow, and that is that.
Screw this up again, pal. We'll send you over to Fox News.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. And we will leave you with a... I can't do it.
You are mentally handicapped.
We'll do it live.
You can't even get it right after five takes. Why would I agree to do it live?
We'll do it live. F*** it.
No, f*** you. We're not going to do it live.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
How are you going to write it? You can't even read it. You troglodyte homunculus. Last chance. In 5, 4, 3.
Growing up the walls. This sunny afternoon is ours after all. The sip, sip, sip of the dripping tap. Raise the pirate flag and laugh. This town is ugly as sin. Hidden from our secret garden. It up as we go along. Sometimes it turns into a song. This song. Don't ask me what leads to end when there is so much to do. Don't ask me where I'm going, 'cause I'm just following you. Space and made it into a different place. Now there's a promise in your eyes, another breakfast when you rise. Don't ask me what needs to end when there is so much to do. Don't ask me where I'm going, 'cause I'm just following you.
The recent police shooting of 23-year-old Carlo Giuliani in the riotous streets of Genoa has sent shockwaves around the world.
Don't ask me what needs to end when there is so much to do. Don't ask me where I'm going.
attention. The Interuniversal Weather Service has issued a severe red giant warning for the sun named Sol in the Charon system, in the outer arm of the Milky Way galaxy, 12 parsecs from Coruscant. The sun is a massive incandescent gas. It is due to turn into a red giant in 4.6 billion years. If you are in the area of the solar system, please seek shelter by developing some reasonable space program that will get your behinds off a doomed planet. This is 93.3 WMRB Wausau.
Free people, free radio.
You are listening to a radio. Because of the time it takes for radio to travel to Earth from distant sources, radio astronomers are able to see the universe as it appeared more than 10 billion years ago. The artificial radio broadcast you are listening to now portrays the universe as it was just 1 second ago. Stay current. Listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
The U.S. government has done some bad things over the years and will almost certainly continue to do them in the years ahead. Foreign policy has very little to do with morality. And as long as any action can be justified by explaining that it was performed in the national interest, that will continue to be the case. And so we give support to repressive governments in South Korea and Brazil and Chile because it is in our national interest to do so. We will supply sophisticated weapons to backward countries and betray an entire people like the Kurds, all because it is in our national interest.
This week in Radical History for the week of July 28th. Inspiration came from the Slingshot Organizer. Some audio is borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York. And other radical info can be found in the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website.
Yo, check this out, man. There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
This week in Radical History for July 28th, 1586, debunking once again that the New World was founded on religious freedoms, Puritan Anne Hutchinson would stand trial and forcibly removed from the colony of her home in the New World. Also on July 28, 1868, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution technically gives equal rights to all non-Indian men, but in practice gives most rights to the wealthy and marginalizes everybody else. Also on this date in 1915, President Wilson sent troops back into Haiti, where the populace were up in arms against the U.S.-backed dictator. You see today how well Haiti is doing because of all the benevolent nature of the good old U.S. of A. Also on this date in 1932, Hoover forcibly evicts bonus marchers from their encampment. Two killed when current U.S. Army attacks encampment of 20,000 World War I veterans gathered in Washington, D.C. to demand their bonus benefit payments. As the flames destroyed the shantytown, people streamed into Maryland. Behind them, they leave the wounded and little Bernard Mares, who dies in Washington Hospital from tear gas inhalation. During this month, as Hoover begins traveling the country for his reelection campaign, he's met with unexpected hatred in St. Paul, where he tells his audience, "Thank God we are still a government that knows how to deal with the mob." Angry murmurs begin to roll up from the crowd in front of him. Shaken, Hoover is forced from the stage. Also on the state in 1940, Gandhi, as he starts his non-cooperative campaign against the British in India, would be quoted as saying, "The exploitation of the poor can be extinguished not by effecting the destruction of a few millionaires, but by removing the ignorance of the poor and teaching them to not cooperate with their exploiters." Lastly, for July 28th, shining a light on more right-wing lies, like when Condoleezza Rice tells us that no one would ever think about planes being used to hit skyscrapers, while in this date in 1945, Army twin-engine B-25 light bomber crashes into the 79th floor of the Empire State Building, setting it afire, killing 13 and injuring 26. Yeah, who could have ever imagined planes hitting tall buildings in New York? This day in radical history for July 29th, 1871, Roberto Elia lives. An Italian militant anarchist, Elia and his friends, Andrea Salzdo, owned a print shop in the United States. In 1920, during the Palmer terrorist raids, to rid the country of, quote, Red Satans, unquote, both were abducted without a warrant for arrest, held in secret, interrogated and beaten for 8 weeks. Andrea mysteriously, quote, fell, unquote, from the 14th floor of the Department of Justice offices. On July 29th in 1903, a delegation from the March of the Mill Children accompanied by Mother Jones arrives at President Theodore Roosevelt's summer home in Oyster Bay, Long Island, to publicize the harsh conditions of child labor. They were not allowed through the gates. The March of the Mill Children began in Philadelphia on July 7th to publicize the harsh conditions of child laborers who were forced to work 60-plus hours a week and often missing fingers and hands from the capitalist textile mills. Also on July 29, 1951, Conference of, quote, Africans, Indians, and Coloreds, unquote, agree on a mass campaign to end the oppressive new apartheid laws in South Africa. It would take decades of actions and boycotts to end the apartheid oppression. Also on this date, 1968, riots rock Seattle central area after the police raid on a local Black Panther Party headquarters. Seattle Black Panther Party leader Aaron Dixon is arrested for possession of a stolen typewriter, later acquitted. Over 3 days of rioting, 69 more would be arrested. Also on July 29, 1974, a second article of impeachment, abuse of power, voted 28-10 against Nixon by the House Judiciary Committee, as former Treasury Secretary John Connolly is indicted on charges involving the acceptance of bribes, perjury, conspiracy, and obstruction of justice, the good old American way. Two more items for July 29th, 1987. Senator George Mitchell tells Ed Meese he finds it hard to accept his explanation that he took no notes during the earlier questioning of key Reagan officials. During the 2 days of testimony, Meese utters the phrase, "I do not recall," or some variation, therefore, about 340 times. Also on July 29, 2004, 400 clash with Boston police. The Boston Area Black Tea Party Society, an ad hoc group of self-described anarchist and anti-authoritarian activists, burn a two-faced effigy depicting President Bush on one side and Senator John Kerry on the other side, get into a shoving match with Boston's finest, one of whom complains, "We've trained for 2 years for this, and they showed us nothing. I'm disappointed in the quality of anarchists we got here." Well, come on out to the RNC in Minneapolis coming up. By the time the Republicans come to Minneapolis-St. Paul for the Republican National Presidential Nomination Convention this September, a large group of protesters from around the country will have been organizing for over 2 years to try to shine a light on this process, and through a diversity of tactics, some will try to shut it down. A vast number of organizations are organizing for this one purpose, both against the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention, which will be held in Denver. I caught up with three people from the No RNC organization on their nationwide tour. Well, this is Mike Cannon. I'm with a group, the RNC Welcoming Committee for the Republican National Convention that's going to be coming up later this fall. Do you have a website that we could go to, and we'll mention again at the end of this, where you possibly get more information if you're interested in finding out more about the RNC Welcoming Committee?
Yeah, the website is www.nornc.org.
What exactly is the Welcoming Committee hoping is going to happen when the Republicans come to Minneapolis?
Well, we have two goals that we've been talking about. One is building our capacity as a movement, so it's actually sort of self-focused. We're interested in people coming out of these protests smarter and stronger than when they went into them. The other is to crash the convention. The interest in that is, I guess, making this a convention to remember. There's a lot of public sentiment against the Republicans right now, and we want to channel that in a more radical direction, and we'd love to see people put as much energy as possible into denying delegates access to the Excel Center.
So there's a big call, basically, for a bunch of for people to show up throughout the United States and possibly the world, even to come and voice their opinions against the Republican National Convention. I'm wondering, you know, if someone was interested in coming by that, and maybe they want to plug in, maybe not, is there going to be ways that they can get involved? Is there going to be places that people might be able to go to if they need a place to stay? Will there possibly be food being served? Any of those kind of things in case someone's listening to the show saying, hey, this might be interesting. Maybe I want to check it out.
Well, we're committed to trying to provide the infrastructural framework for people who want to come into town to protest the RNC. This includes trying to set up housing, whether there's a lot of groups that are working to make sure that there's food for everyone. There should be, like, some bikes for people to ride around. We're hoping to put up, like, a travel board for ride shares and things like that. So we're really committed to trying to make sure that that sort of, like, basic logistical support is there for everyone.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about the RNC Welcoming Committee? Again, the Republicans are coming to Minneapolis this fall, and I'm speaking with some members of the RNC Welcoming Committee who are on a tour talking about some of the events that are planned. Is there anything else you want to talk to? And then at the end of that, if you could, again, tell me the website.
To, you know, give everyone a heads up of sort of what we're planning, what the anarchist, anti-authoritarian sort of strategy that came out of our big national pre-NC consulta last summer, last September, was one of blockading and denying delegates access to the Excel Center. So we really encourage people to go to our website, nornc.org, and check out the details on what we're doing with that, but also to recognize that there's all sorts of different ways to plug in, both within the anarchist and anti-authoritarian blockading framework, no matter what your level of risk that you want to take or whatever types of actions you want to do. There's a lot of ways to plug in, and there's a lot of other stuff that's going on in the Twin Cities over those 4 days, so people should definitely keep an eye out and consider coming.
Agreements we've made with other groups we're working with locally actually is a commitment to diversity of tactics. What that basically means is that we recognize we don't have the answers, we don't know the best way to go about this, and the best way is probably the sum of all of our parts doing different things, doing what we feel is most effective or what moves us. That's why we are creating a broad framework for all types of different actions.
Well, thank you for a couple minutes to spend with me today. I appreciate it, and good luck with your tour. That was an interview with people organizing against the Republican National Convention, September 1st through the 4th in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. For more information, go to nornc.org. That's nornc.org. From the Glee Glee Studios, this is Mark Cannon. This Week in Radical History for July 30th, 1866. Police shoot into assembly of blacks outside the Mechanics Institute in New Orleans, and a crowd of whites then storm the hall. By the time the federal troops restored order, 38 are dead, 136 wounded, most of them are black.
What usually happens when people without guns stand up to people with guns.
Also on July 30th, 1881, Marine General Smedley Butler lives, best remembered for his book War is a Racket. Smedley Butler, who was one of the most conscientious, driven, and controversial men ever to wear the uniform of the United States Marine Corps. Although he rose to the rank of Major General and was two-time winner of the Medal of Honor, Butler is remembered today as his vocal critic to the colonization and American foreign policy. By the time of his retirement in 1931, in bitter recollection of his 33 years of military career, he realized that far from making the world safer for democracy, he had spent his entire adult life fighting dirty little wars all over the Asia and Latin America areas, whose true purpose was to enrich the handful of wealthy industrialists. That was Smedley Butler's War is a Racket. Henry Ford, an American automobile manufacturer, is financing Adolf Hitler's nationalist anti-Semitic movement in Munich. His spacious office headquarters in Munich is splendidly furnished, and his organization employs a host of highly paid lieutenants and officials in Berlin. Ford's own anti-Semite newspaper, the Dearborn Independent, with a circulation over 700,000, first attacked Jews in its May 1920 issue. Many of these were reprinted as The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, 4 volumes, and later published in a variety of languages and disseminated widely throughout the United States and abroad. And on this date in 1974, the U.S. Congress released findings that Ford's involvement with the Nazis are true. Have you driven your Ford Nazi supporter car lately? Also on this date in 1945 in the high seas, USS Indianapolis, having just completed a secret mission to deliver the atomic bomb that would be dropped on Hiroshima, is torpedoed. The ship sinks in 12 minutes. Because of the secret nature of this mission, the incident is not reported for 5 days. Survivors were left to fend for their own before the Navy plane on routine patrol discovered them. Of the 1,100 men aboard, 880 lost their lives in the drowning in sharks and exposures. Add that to your calculations and ethics of dropping a nuke on civilian population centers. Also on this date in 1969, Tricky Dick Nixon calls the Vietnam War one of America's finest hours. Same war, same propaganda, different times. Also on this date in 1970, a series of bombings attributed to England's anarchist Angry Brigade occur over the next 18 months. Also on July 30th, 1972, 53 caribou found dead near an army base that has served as a site for chemical and biological warfare laboratory. The post commander suggests that the animals might have been struck by lightning. I suggest that perhaps they were just suicidal. Lastly, on this date in 1996 in England, 4 Plowshare activists acquitted of all charges on the basis of preventing a greater crime after having extensively damaged an F-16 jet fighter that was to be sold to the Indonesia government in a genocidal occupation of East Timor. Guess who makes F-16s? Anyone? Anyone?
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
This Week in Radical History for July 31st, 1859, U.S. troops land in Shanghai to protect American interests. People, the time has come.
This is your radio news reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 31st in 1936, Pedro Albizu Campos, president of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party, was charged with trying to overthrow the government and sentenced to 6 to 10 years in prison. Albizu had dedicated his life to the liberation and decolonization of Puerto Rico, and in 1950, he was arrested again and sentenced to a 72-year prison term. While locked up, he claimed that he was subject to dangerous and painful radiation experiments which the U.S. were conducting illegally in Puerto Rican prison. The American government consistently denied Albizu's accusation and claimed that he was insane, but his health condition did continue to mysteriously deteriorate until he died in prison 15 years later. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Only a couple more items for July 31st. 1974, John Ehrlichman sentenced to a 20-month to 5-year club-fed prison for his role in the burglary of the offices of Daniel Ellsberg, psychiatrist under Tricky Dick Nixon's reign of terror. Also on that date, 1984, the CIA's Williams Casey and Reagan sweetheart Ollie North arrived seeking Manuel Noriega's aid for the Contras. You know, Noriega, who would be arrested a couple years later for not helping us out enough. Lastly, on this date in 2000, police raid the puppet warehouse before the RNC in Philly. This week in Radical History for August 1st, we only have three items. 1917, IWW organizer Frank Little lynched in Butte, Montana, and his body is left dangling from the railroad trestles. Also on August 1st, 1938, 200 peaceful demonstrating workers were attacked by 70 cops. 51 longshoremen, racially mixed, and union supporters in Hilo, Hawaii, are bayoneted and shot in the back by police. Lastly, on his state in 1969, Massachusetts Supreme Court judge rejects the DA request for an inquest into the death of Mary Jo Capaci, killed by Kennedy, who only receives a 2-month suspended sentence. Yep, everybody has equal rights under the law. This week in Radical History for August 2nd, only got a couple items. 1832, Sioux Fox tribes in Wisconsin, under a white flag of truce, massacred at Bad Axe River by Illinois militia. The militia commander records his impression, quote, "As we neared them, they raised a white flag and endeavored to decoy us, but we were a little too old for them. The militia disregarded the surrender attempts and slaughtered nearly the entire group, including women and children." Also in Wisconsin in 1855, Wisconsin Black River Band of the Chippewa signed treaty to compensate Chippewa for destruction of their homes and construction of a 500-lock Great Lakes system. The Chippewa have yet to be paid. Perhaps considered the smartest man ever to live, Albert Einstein on this date in 1931 urges all scientists to refuse military work. Two more items for August 2nd, 1943. 800 inmates revolt at Tripeka concentration camp, raid the SS arsenal, and kill over 20 guards, allowing more than 100 prisoners to escape. Lastly, on this date in 1990, after years of Saddam Hussein protesting Kuwaiti slant oil drilling on Iraqi lands, and after U.S. Ambassador April Gillespie tells them that the U.S. would stay out of any Iraq-Kuwait war, Iraq invades Kuwait. United States invades Iraq. And the beat goes on. This week in Radical History for August 3rd, three items, 1906. 12 unidentified black soldiers make a shooting sortie into Brownsville, Texas, killing one citizen. President Teddy Roosevelt, stating that since no one would confess, all would have to suffer, gives dishonorable discharges to every black in Brownsville camp, including three Medal of Honor winners. Also on August 3rd, 1913, four die in what is called the Wetland Riots, when police fire into a crowd of California farm workers trying to organize for better working conditions. Two labor leaders, one not even present at this day, are later convicted for murder and encouraging workers to organize, which, by the legal logic of the time, apparently forced officials to shoot and kill. Conditions on the farms were terrible, with no water in fields, and workers suffered from diphtheria, malaria, and typhoid fever. How dare they try to organize against that? Lastly and sadly, in 1945, two young black women are raped by uniformed police officers in Memphis, Tennessee. This has been This Week in Radical History, produced at the Glee Glee Studios. Inspiration came from the Slingshot organizer. Google the Slingshot Collective for more info. Special thanks to the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York, whose great audio I borrowed for the show. And more radical info can be found at the Daily Bleed website. Google the Daily Bleed for more radical information. Comments or suggestions, please consider emailing me at themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Cannon spelled C-A-N-N-O-N. That's themikecannonshow@hotmail.com. Reminder what anarchist and feminist Emma Goldman said. If voting never really changed anything, they would have made it illegal. This has been This Week in Radical History, and until next week, as always, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
of her own Zion.
Give these people a voting day every year so that they'll have the illusion of meaningless choice. Meaningless choice that we go like slaves and say, "Yo, I voted."
You are listening to a radio. These radio waves are brought to you by quasars, pulsars, our sun, and some artificial sources.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement. The House held a hearing last week about privacy and the Internet. Under particular scrutiny was a technology called deep packet inspection that is used by Internet service providers to manage broadband data traffic and target advertising to individual Internet users. With deep packet inspection, an ISP can see everything a user sends or receives and every site they visit on the web. Representative Edward Markey of Massachusetts expressed his concern about the sensitivity of personal information being collected.
Consumers deserve clear, conspicuous, and constructive notice about what broadband providers' use of deep packet inspection will be. Meaningful opt-in consent for such use, and no monitoring or data interception of those consumers who do not grant consent for such use.
In an interchange with Robert Dykes, CEO of behavioral advertising company Nebuad, Markey pressed the issue of the need for consumers to opt in to targeted advertising. Nebuad currently gathers and sells information about users unless they opt out.
It's just like saying that the mailman can open up any letter, can open up any package, find out what's in it, and then start to partner with other companies, letting them know what individual Americans are receiving in the mail, what kind of packages are coming to their house. But it's okay because the consumer doesn't know that you're doing it and hasn't given you the opportunity to say to the mailman, stop opening my packages, stop opening my mail. I don't want anyone to know about it. And so we've got a real problem here.
Markey indicated that Congress could take action to strengthen privacy protections.
The very principles of individual freedom, individual liberty, your right not to have either the government or a private sector company coming into your life without your permission is central to who we are as Americans. That's what we fought for. That's what we continue to fight for.
The conventional wisdom among local television news broadcasters is that quality journalism doesn't attract good ratings. If it bleeds, it leads has been the mantra of the TV news industry for years, spawning sensationalized stories of crime and disasters that is now daily fare on most local news broadcasts. But a new study disproves the notion that audiences prefer superficial tabloid coverage to well-written quality journalism. Professor Marion Just of Wellesley College and the Joan Shorenstein Center on Press Politics and Public Policy at Harvard says she and her co-author Todd Belt initially wanted to give a nudge to the industry. The researchers compiled a huge amount of data from nearly 34,000 news stories from 50 TV markets across the country. The stories were then scored for quality, with criteria determined by news professionals.
We began to look at all of this data and said, you know, let's see if we can figure out how this matches up with the ratings. And what we found was that better stories tended to get better ratings. And by better, we didn't mean necessarily that they were only on politics or esoteric subjects, but stories that people in the journalism business told us were better stories. That is, stories that had good sourcing, multiple points of view, a balance of views, experts, use of data.
So why do so many local news networks continue with superficial stories? Just says that local TV news is a victim of its own success.
Because it has attracted such a large audience, the local stations use it as a cash cow. And in order to make the maximum profit, they've been squeezing the actual budgets, which forces news directors to cheapen the stories. And how do you do that? You put fewer personnel on the story. You accept a video news release. You don't get the other side of the story. Those are things that make the news cheaper to produce, but it also loses audience.
Professor Just and Professor Belt have written a book published by Cambridge University Press called We Interrupt This Newscast, How to Improve Local News and Win Ratings, Too. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national, nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit www.freepress.net.
Security agent.
No, let him stay.
No. Well, at least it's a fruit pie.
Let's pray for him right now. Anita, let's pray. Anita, why don't you pray? That's all right.
Father, we want to thank you for the opportunity of coming to Des Moines. Father, I want to ask that you forgive him.
That we love him.
And that we love him. And that we're praying for him to be delivered from his deviant lifestyle, Father.
Charlie Caroli, in the way we walk.
See them scramble to the top. Watch them fall from the rain. I'll never trust a man with egg on his face.
Intellectual tarts with a good left hook. Shot copycat killers. Cover and dunk. Assassins, you shout ice cream, and the party starts on account of
1, 2, 3. See them scramble to the top, watch them fall from the rain. I'll never trust a man with egg on his
without words, and everybody understands, just desserts, delivered by hand. Nobody move, or the CEO hits it in the face with cream and dough.
See them scramble to the top, watch them fall from the rain. I'll never trust a man.
Mike Cannon Show, normally heard Mondays from 2 to 6.
I'm with another gentleman here who's at the anti-Nazi protests. And I want
this is Mike Cannon. I'm with Becca, who has returned from Palestine for the fourth time.
I'm with a vendor at the energy fair here who has biodiesel.
This is Mike Cannon. I'm with a group, the RNC Welcoming Committee for the Republican National Convention that's going to be coming up.
Anita's still here, even in Algiers, where a lot of the community businesses aren't open, and it's 100 times fold that in huge swaths of this town, like in the 9th Ward, where almost nobody's back because there's no infrastructure set up there. So
stay current.
Listen to the Mike Cannon Show.
And you too can stay current by checking out the Mike Cannon Indie Media Radio Show, normally heard every Monday from 2 to 6 p.m. on this, your only not-for-profit, commercial-free community radio station, 93.3 WNRB LP Wausau. Free people, free radio.